Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Beckley Mason from the New York Times, from Hoopspeak.com. My good friend in a gluttonous Thanksgiving adventure for you. How's it going?
It's going good. I went to bed early and thought I would be like getting up and we'll be ready to do this podcast first thing in the morning, but my food coma basically forced me to hibernate until noon, so thanks for letting us get this set up a little later.
Yeah, no problem. Actually, you can thank my internet company because they just decided I didn't need internet anymore, which is problematic for my job. So I was dealing with that for a little bit.
Yeah, that dealing with cable companies is always the worst. No one, this isn't news to anybody, but it seems like at some point someone's going to figure out how to like run it like a human being, and at that point, put like four businesses out on the street.
That would be nice, just for some kind of human interaction. And the problem is that in our building, we're only allowed one company, which seems illegal to me. I guess I don't understand that kind of industry all that well. But
you're not a big business guy. Let me explain it to you.
Yeah, not big into business.
You're what we call bent over the chair.
Right.
And that's a technical business term.
Okay.
And Time Warner or whoever you have has what's called rights to you, and they're not giving them up. Yeah, they'll do this thing where they're like, just not show up when they say they're going to, and then like report back. I had this happen. The guy didn't show up, and then he reported back that he had shown up and waited for like 15 minutes. When I think had hoped that I'd actually not been there, but I was like there the whole time waiting for him. So that's like a great fight to have.
That's just one of those like, it's like no, you didn't. Yes, I did. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. It's a very adult conversation to have with a company that you're trying to get services from.
Yeah. You have to pull the. They don't believe the customer is always right.
No.
That's not the way they do business.
Yeah.
Hey, do you want to talk about basketball or anything?
We could. It seems to get in the way of a lot of my thoughts on life, but we could do that. You're in the Seattle area right now, or are you in the city of Seattle?
I am. Yeah.
Are you overlooking the Puget Sound by any chance?
Yeah, I'm wearing a kind of like a North Face fleece and some dirty denim jeans and some boots, and drinking my coffee overlooking the wispy fog drifting in over the Sound.
Yeah.
And ferries go back and forth.
I was a little,
what I do the whole time I'm here.
I was a little disappointed. I was hoping that you would give me a number to call that was just inside the Space Needle.
No, I love it. I don't know if you even heard it, but the first time you called, my mom picked up the phone. I had to yell like, "Mom, I got it! Get off the phone, Mom! It's my friend!"
It's good to be home for the holidays, right?
Yeah, it's always nice.
Yeah. So you are a Seattleite. You're part of that Seattle basketball scene. It's basically, it's you, it's Jamal Crawford, it's Nate Robinson, and Isaiah Thomas. Yeah, Kevin Pelton. That's the
we all you know, every Thanksgiving we get together and go watch a Rainier Beach game.
You're part of the basketball scene, and recently we had Eddie Vedder of Pearl Jam he's kind of famous, formerly of Mookie Blaylock, talking about how The Thunder are still a team that Seattle roots for, at least that the band roots for, because it was their team to begin with, which is true, all factually correct, and that he's more mad at, not at the OKC fans, but just at the situation in general, and then basically told the city of Sacramento that, you know, F those guys, they can go to hell.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of something that people with big megaphones get to do, whether they have a podcast that literally dozens listen to, or
you could just say my name. Yeah, that's fine.
But they tend to do this thing like, you know, Seattle people do this, or you know, Oklahoma City people know this, and I would say that the reactions to the Thunder are actually pretty nuanced, person to person. I think we've given up on trying to hate them.
Yeah.
I really only have like one friend who's still like holding out as though he's not, you know, just like in love with watching Durant play. I remember the first time Thunder went to the playoffs. It was like I hadn't really seen them on national TV. They were playing the Lakers like 4 years ago, and I just got so mad watching these people enjoying this team so much. I mean, they like really love that team, and they, you think that it would be like, oh, that's great, you know, they really like have a strong relationship, and that team's in a good place now. But what it actually makes you realize is how much joy you're missing out on. And it just makes you more and more bitter.
Yeah, they have that whole thing of, like, the crowd stands until the first points are scored or something like that. And you're probably just looking at that going, oh, that would have been a cool thing for us to do. That would be a community thing.
You know, they have that college town, you know, feeling. Instead of being like, wow, that's really great and neat, you're like, yeah, that's because they need public funding to have the university team there. Like, you just find, like, everything goes, like, immediately you make the most bitter reaction to it.
Do you have any hope that there will be an actual team in Seattle anytime soon, or does it just seem like they're becoming the Los Angeles of the NFL, where it's like the threat of, oh, we can move the team to Seattle if you don't give us an arena.
We're going to get the Raiders for 3 years
right,
or whatever. Yeah, I think eventually they're going to, just because Seattle is such a enormous market in terms of corporate dollars. Like, it's like a mid-sized market for people.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, Amazon and Boeing is still out here, Expedia, like, there's just Microsoft, obviously, Starbucks, corporations fund it if it ever does come back. So I think it's got to be a very attractive market to the NBA. But, you know, we've seen also that the NBA is pursuing sort of a football model in terms of, you know, making it so that teams like the Jacksonville's of the NBA can have a great shot at winning, and, you know, sort of remove some of, or a decent amount of the power from teams like the Knicks and Lakers. So who knows, you know, it might just not be that big of a priority. Like, some of the sizes of the markets that the NBA has pursued and protected are, would lead you to believe that that's not really a consideration.
Yeah. I really am. This whole parody thing has come up for some reason. I blame Ethan Sherwood-Strauss for this because he just talks about it nonstop. But this whole idea of, like, parody and follow the NFL model, I just don't like it for the NBA. I really don't. I like elitism with my NBA title, and I'm very proud of the fact that you can't get, like, a hot goalie. Well, it would be weird to have a goalie on the court anyway, but you can't get a hot goalie to ride your team.
Isn't that what Roy Hibbert last year?
Yeah, that's probably... I mean, I guess, in a way, Dirk was the hot goalie in 2011, but...
You just need some guy who never gets called for fouls when he, like, attempts to... When he goes, like, quote, straight up.
Yeah.
And is the master of, like, not being straight up at all, but absolutely getting the calls because he's got that rep.
Well, he's also so tall that it's just an optical illusion.
Right, well, and it's like he can't jump, and I think that also helps him too. It's like just the fact that he's just standing there, and then jumps, like, you know, 8 inches off the ground compared to, like, you know, Blake Griffin. If he doesn't jump straight up, like, the ref's gonna have a long time to tell.
Yeah. And I think that it was fascinating watching him and watching Roy Hibbert and Nikola Pekovic play each other this past week, because it's two guys that no matter what the rules are, they never leave the paint. It's amazing that, I mean, Peck is in the paint for the entire 24 seconds on an offensive possession. Roy Hibbert, no matter where his man is just standing at the rim. It's quite incredible how they defy the rules.
Yeah, I think the credibility issue of refs, I mean, like, makes sense. Like, it'd be impossible to call NBA games with, like, players that you see over and over and not, like, associate characteristics with them and stuff. But, yeah, if you're, like, known for doing something, like playing good defense, you, like, don't get as many calls for, like, slaps on the arms. But, like,
right,
the big one is the principle of verticality to me, that because it's such a tough call. And I feel like they're definitely, like, okay, 50-50, like, tie goes to his reputation.
Right. Speaking of reputation, the New York Knicks have a bad reputation right now.
Walk around sad reputation. Leave the fans sad, I guess, would be the lyric. Not that cool.
No, that was a good attempt, though. I got what you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was. That's a team you're around because you are actually based in Brooklyn. Like 800
yeah,
other NBA
yeah.
bloggers have flocked to. Why is everyone flocked to Brooklyn?
It's a commune situation where we share internet and toiletry supplies.
Okay.
And that basically has drawn everyone. I don't know. I think people try to. I mean, like, I'm definitely not cool enough to live in Brooklyn.
No, not at all.
If I can limit my interactions with people to, like, only a few minutes and then drop that I live in Brooklyn, it just paints, you know, colors their whole perception of me.
Yeah.
Usually in decent ways, but, and that's kind of, I'm just trying to get that hipster shine on.
I mean, you're doing a fantastic job from what I hear.
Thank you.
Graydon Gordian speaks highly of you. Charlie Widow speaks highly of you. You know, really
I know Graydon doesn't, but that's...
No, that's not... Yeah, that's true. That was a lie. That was a bald-faced lie. The Knicks, though, you're around the Knicks. You're around the Nets a little bit, right?
Yeah, yep.
And how is that situation going with this early part of the season?
Well, hey, stop me if you've heard this one before, but these teams are bad.
Yes.
The Knicks are, I think, like 3-11 right now, and it is bleak in that locker room after games because, okay, so most times when a team is bad, you know, the papers who cover it don't assign as many reporters. There's just, like, not much attention to them.
Yeah.
But the Knicks are, like, the opposite in that New York loves suffering. And they're going to, like, the fact that the Knicks are really bad is a massive story that, like, everyone is covering. And so instead of having, like, the losers' locker room have, like, you know, 8 reporters milling around getting a quote here or there, it is, like, jam-packed with people who cannot wait to ask these guys who just came off the court how much they suck. Like, and why do they suck?
Right.
And so all the players know what's coming. They're all just super depressed, waiting to deal with the media. And it starts out, you know, with normal questions. And then by the end, it's like the reporters are, like, comforting the players. Like, I know it's tough, but why are you guys playing no defense? Like, they're asking, like, these super mean questions, but they try to, like, put this tone on it so that, like, yeah, I'm right there with you, bud. It's going to get bad, though. I need them to start winning because it's just depressing after the games. It's so much more fun to talk to players who win occasionally, which now you get to do in Minnesota, and I'm sure it makes covering them a lot more enjoyable just from, like, a human perspective.
It is a little annoying because expectations were not – I don't even know how high they were. It's weird because the crowds have sucked so far. Like, they've been loud, but you're – I don't know. There are a couple thousand seats open at every game, and I'm like – I don't know. It seems like a pretty fun team to you'd want to go and watch, but maybe they just don't trust them because there's this whole just like defeatist Minnesota sports fan mentality that
I've been hurt before.
Yeah,
I can never love again.
They still like hang on to this Gary Anderson field goal in like 98. I'm like, it's been 15 years. You need to get over this. But yeah, the crowds have been they've been loud, but they haven't been full. But the media section has been very full. And it's that part's a little annoying because it was nice towards the end of last year. You could just go have a conversation with any player you wanted after a game. And now,
right.
You know, Kevin Love is a little surly, not surly, but he's just kind of like disconnected from talking to the media, except after the loss to the Nuggets this past week, he was swearing up and down left and right. Just, we need to play effing defense. We're playing like excrement. Like, it was really, I mean, he kind of let his personality back out a little bit. So that was, I guess that was fun, even though they lost in an embarrassing fashion. But yeah, it's nice to at least know that there's a good chance of them winning most nights, as opposed to if you're watching the Knicks, it would just be, how are they going to lose? Well, no, that's the problem. You know how they're going to lose. It's just going to be bad
right.
defense and inconsistent offense.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much summarized it. I love though that like the people who are Knicks fans and writers on Twitter appear to be discovering anew that their team is awful every time they play.
Yeah.
like they think that their suffering is like just so unique and, you know, remarkable.
Which is like, weird too, because
you have a bad team. Like,
yeah,
get used to it.
They went through the whole Isaiah Thomas thing. Like, how are they not used to this?
Yeah, no, I think, well, I think in New York also there's an expectation that, like, people who live in New York, especially people from New York, assume that anything that is from or in New York is the absolute best iteration of that thing. And so, you know, when it's a team, and even though, like, everyone before the season was like, yeah, it seems like going to win, like, 35 to 40 games. This is a powder keg. They're still, like, shocked and awed that this is such a bad team. And, like, I guess, you know, what else is there to do but just wail and you know, lament your own fate? But it's getting old on the old Twitters. It might have to go like a big Knicks fan purge until people just mellow out a little bit.
Mellow out. That was some fun wordplay.
I did not mean it.
What are the chances of them getting good? Like, can they happen this season, do you think? If Tyson Chandler comes back.
LeBron. So once they get LeBron.
Yeah, that's true. That'll help.
It's only a matter of time before they're you know, putting the rings on everyone's fingers.
Well, they are dangling Iman Shumpert quite a bit, so maybe that can get LeBron.
We have this replacement level guard who we've been driving down his value for the last, you know, year and a half. You want him? Yeah, no, I don't think they're going to be good anytime soon. I mean, they could, I guess, hypothetically, there are ways for a team to become good, like Felton to get healthy and make a bunch of threes, and Chandler to get healthy and be able to play 33 minutes a night. But okay, let's just say that, like, this current group of Knicks can't get it together.
Right.
What are they going to do? Is a pretty reasonable question. I feel really bad. Actually, I do have some sympathy for Melo this year, because that guy is really working hard, and maybe not always in the most productive ways, but, you know, he's rebounding. He's the only rebounder on his team, and he's really working hard at that. He's playing huge minutes. You know, they throw it into the post with him over and over, so he goes one-on-one, and you can tell that he, like, wants to put everything that's going wrong, wants to, like, throw his body in front of it and stop it. The problem is, and the irony is, that the more he does, the further they get from what worked last year, which was, yeah, Melo takes a lot of shots, but he's the finisher on the team.
Right.
The ball doesn't have to go into him in the post every single possession. You know, they run him off screens, they let him in the pick and roll. They run other people off screens and let him spot up and attack closeouts. And when they were doing that, when he was letting, you know, his teammates start it off for him and finishing it, he was a nightmare, because, you know, he's such a good shooter when he gets his feet set, and he's so strong and he drives by on the closeout. But kind of their response to him, you know, to not having the offense going, is to just circumvent everything that really worked last year about the ball movement and because Felton isn't healthy, getting penetration elsewhere, and just throw it into Melo, and he's trying, you know, his damnedest to do it all, but that's just not what works for him, and they can't get back to that formula until they get some guards who can get in the paint regularly.
Which is weird, because I've always thought of Beno Udrich as that guy that can just break down a defense.
No one gets to his 13-foot fadeaway like Beno Udrich.
It is... it's astonishing. And this, like, numbers like these don't really matter all that much, but I just looked it up, and Andrea Bargnani is their second leading scorer, and that just seems problematic to me. I've defended Bargnani, like, when he was on the Raptors. Not that I thought he was good, but I just didn't think he was, you know, this atrocious albatross that just made the franchise want to crawl inside itself and die. But he's really not that good of a player.
Yeah, there are that Portland game that was pretty embarrassing.
Brutal.
There was this play where, like, basically there's a middle pick and roll, and Lillard came down and dunked it, and Bargnani was standing on, like, the strong side block. Like, Lillard almost had to bump him to get to the rim, and Bargnani was, like, looking out at the wing. I don't know what he was looking for. Like, there was, like, going to be a screen that he might have to get involved in or something, but it was like He never saw the ball until Lillard was in the air dunking. And Lillard had just dribbled the ball up court. Like, it wasn't like there was a lot of ball movement or, like, tricky plays where he got stuck on a screen.
Yeah.
It was like, what is he – that's such a basic fundamental. You just wonder, like, at what point – what coach when he was 9, like, 13, was like, just remember, doesn't matter where the ball is as long as you're 6 inches from the guy you're guarding. It seems to be like – he had that, like, burned into his brain at some point, and just, I don't know, like, I'm sure in film and whatever else, Woodson's like, so you got to move. Like, when you see this guy dribbling, you got to come and put your body in front of him in the rim. But it's just, it's like he doesn't have, like there's some mental connection, some mental synapse that's, like, stuck and, like, won't fire when it's time to rotate, and he just kind of stares at it.
Maybe he's really into, like, celebrities, so he's just looking at the celebrities sitting courtside at Knicks games. He's just like, wow, that's Larry David. I love Curb Your Enthusiasm. Like,
well, that happened in Portland, and not to say, you know, the Moda Center isn't full of
A-list. Oh, don't call it the Moda Center. I really dislike that.
Danny now,
yeah.
He always calls it the Moda, and it took me like a long time to figure out what he was talking about, because I kind of missed the whole name change news.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I'm going to the Moda tonight. And I was like, all right.
Sounds like a speakeasy.
Sounding. That's some club. I don't know. Yeah, no, the Rose Garden was such a great name for it. I'm hoping I'm actually going to be down in Portland next week, and I think I'm going to catch the Thunder coming in town, which I'm pretty excited about.
Ooh, let's talk about the Thunder.
Okay.
That's a good segue. Good job by you. That was much better than your lyrical attempt earlier. It was really embarrassing.
I actually have James Herbert typing me notes, making sure that I move to the next subject.
Just like our old Hoopspeak Live days. I did one of those spree casts with Ethan on, I don't know what day, Wednesday. And it did feel a lot like Hoopspeak Live, but without the, what would you call it, the organization.
Yeah, without the direction.
Yeah, without direction.
Cool, nice.
Yeah, it was great. Fans. Yeah, but the Thunder employ one of your favorites, Reggie Jackson, who I feel like, all right, this is going to be a bad example, but this is the best I can come up with. I was, like, I'm obsessed with Ricky Davis because he's a talented guy who's, like, he should be a really good basketball player. And I feel like your Reggie Jackson thing, like, Reggie plays more, what would you call it, team basketball than Ricky ever did. But Reggie's good, but he's not that good, and you seem quite smitten with him.
I am really, I really like his game. I think if Reggie, I think it's one of those, I mean, it's not the same, but it's a similar, like, Bledsoe scenario. Like, as soon as, if Reggie Jackson, for instance, was, like, a starting point guard in the East, they'd be like, oh, man, you know, like, potential all-star. Because obviously there's, like, no one over there. But he, I mean, I love his size. I love the way he attacks the rim and the way he finishes through contact. Like, he, you know, he finishes like a big boy. Like, a big difference, I think, between starting point guards and backup point guards is what they can do in traffic on their drives. And I think he's, like, as, you know, really, really proficient there. I hope that he gets, you know, I haven't seen a ton of their 2-point guard lineup with him and Westbrook, but I just feel like in the playoffs, that's going to be the crunch time lineup. And I think if he can hit, you know, spot up threes at a respectable rate, that is just going to be so tough to guard, because then basically anytime they get a rebound, if they hit Reggie, Russell, or Kevin, we're on a first name basis.
Yeah, of course.
It's like 4 dribbles to the rim. You know, I think that's such a powerful tool.
Yeah.
In the off season or in the postseason, is being able to get those easy buckets, even when, you know, it's not a turnover, it's just a rebound, and you can get up court and get fouled really quickly. I think, and in the half court, obviously, you know, you load up on one side, you basically have 3 guys who are super quick to the rim and make pretty good decisions. So I think he's a huge key for them this year.
They do kill with him on the court too. They're like he leads the on-off net rating of, like, he's plus 17.5 when he's on the court.
Well, you can't, you know, that's also because he plays with Derek Fisher, who is...
that's true.
Just really inflating those numbers.
It's, well, this is weird that they're, I mean, it's been 12 games with Derek Fisher on the floor, so take that for what you will, but they are, like, 8 points better defensively with him on the court, which just seems incorrect.
That's because refs have allowed him to bear hug the people he's guarding for, like, the last 10 years.
It's a lot like dry humping when he's on the court. Like, he's just really, really just going after these guys. Physically.
Yeah, for sure. When he comes on, he just, like, immediately starts fouling. Like, are you going to call it? Or are you just going to let me do it? Like, either way, I'm going to start hammering guys for the next 10 minutes.
They've jumped to 10-3, and I guess, I don't know if people were really taking them seriously until they ended the Spurs winning streak, and now it seems like these Thunder, everyone's remembering, oh yeah, they were really good last year until Russell Westbrook went down with a knee injury, and they could be, I don't know, as good of a contender to make the finals in the West as anybody.
Yeah, I think they're better than they are last year, just because I would take what Reggie and Jeremy Lamb do over what they got sort of collectively from Kevin Martin.
Yeah.
And especially in terms of just athleticism and on-ball pressure, you know, they can do some good things there. And, you know, it's Serge Ibaka is, like, a little bit better. Russell Westbrook, still really good. Kevin Durant, probably a little bit better.
Yeah.
It's the thing when your best players are, like, 19 years old, is keep getting better organically. Like, you don't have to change anything, and your 24-year-old player is better than he was when he was 23. That's what's so scary about teams like the Thunder and Pacers. It's like, oh yeah, like Paul George can't rent cars yet, so he's probably going to be pretty good in 4 years.
Well, that's why he's so good, is he hasn't done what most young men do, is just rent cars and go out driving. He's been able to stay in the gym and really work on his game. I feel like that's a huge key. No,
the Emerald Isle is a slippery slope.
It really is. I also, like, I'm ready to already admit I was wrong, and I never do this after such a small sample, but Steven Adams is, like, legitimately a good role player. I thought he was going to be horrendous in the NBA. I hated whatever team he was going to. I thought it was a terrible decision. And he's already, like, a competent big man who I don't know that he should be starting over Kendrick Perkins, but I don't think the conversation's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. What does Kendrick Perkins do that Steven Adams doesn't do? You know, I mean, Steven's got the scowl. He's got a very scary face. So I think that he's right there with Perk. He's a better, like, athlete. He moves really well.
Yeah.
He's got 2 extra inches of face bone, so he's right. Pretty much ready for battle.
And I would just say he's a tougher guy too. That New Zealand tough is just different than I'm gonna fight you as long as there's 8 people between us tough that Kendrick Perkins seems to have.
Well, you know what? I don't want either of them to ever be mad at me, but Adams, you know, New Zealand is a state, or I guess what do you call it, like a country, I guess.
Right. I mean, I think officially now.
It's a giant island of criminals. and just, you know, think about the beating that goes on there to make people ready for that. So Adams is like this other guy who I'm really liking, my main man, Sky Miles Plumlee, and I don't think you're on board with that.
No, very much not.
Plumlee, I am really, like, kind of an interesting history. He basically did 4 years of role-playing college at Duke, where all he did was play man-to-man defense and dunk, and then he went to Indiana and got, like, his MBA post-grad from Frank Vogel defense, and now he's in Phoenix and just killing it. Like, he is like a double-double machine who's making no money, and they got for very little.
And what's funny is that he's an incredible athlete, but people kind of just dismiss the fact that he had, like, a 40-inch combine vertical for for a 7-footer. Like, I feel like that's something you should pay more attention to.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just this incredibly built guy who can fly, and so, like, he's swatting shots left and right. He's finishing at the rim. Like, he's another one of those, like, kind of really good young role-playing centers that maybe his reputation was wrong. And if he had gone to Kansas instead of Duke, people probably would have loved him.
Right. Well, that's a great point. And also, I like players like him who, in college, like, all they did was the thing that they were going to do in the NBA. Like,
yeah.
All he did was rebound, screen, and dunk. And you don't have to teach him a damn thing for him to do those things really well for your pro team. And I thought that was, there's like a genius in finding those guys in the later rounds. It's like, you don't need to take a shot, which the Pacers didn't, to find these. And they ended up having a backup big and moving him for Scola, which is a huge value for them. But if you don't need to take a shot, like, these role players who have really honed skills and NBA bodies, they're great picks.
You're a part of the whole Eric Bledsoe is a god train wreck right now, right?
Well, I believe in the paradox of man gods, and so that's kind of where I stand on Bledsoe. I'm not willing to say he is a god,
yeah,
but he sort of lives in that ether of paradox.
No, he's the god of guys who put up cool stats, but teams are actually worse when they're on the court.
Oh, is he the god of leading the NBA in fourth quarter scoring? I thought he might have been.
I don't know. All I know is that his team is 4 points worse per 100 possessions when he's on the court than when he's off.
Yeah, that's because he has to play with Phoenix's subs.
I mean, they stagger a little bit, right? I will admit playing with Gerald Green is never a good idea.
Yeah, I know. I mean, well, that team is... Don't they now have a losing record? Like, aren't they...
Yeah.
That team should not win any game.
They're 8-7.
The Morrises. Okay. The Morrises are balling. I like him and Dragic out there.
Yeah, I like that pairing.
No one can stay in front of Bledsoe, and it seems like teams haven't figured out he can't shoot. So until, as long as that keeps happening and he doesn't have to make any pull-ups, he's going to be putting up huge numbers. And you got to admit, though, that like his rebounding, assist, steal stats are all crazy. Like, there's no way he's not helping.
No, that's the thing that actually surprised me, because I saw he was putting up, like, I don't know, 26-4 or something ridiculous like that. And so I went and looked at just, like, the on-off numbers. I was like, huh, somehow they're worse. And it was a lot of, like, I think the crux of it was, like, it was the Bledsoe, Gerald Green, Channing Frye triumvirate was just not helping the team at all in any way.
Yeah, I like Channing as a backup big because, big dudes who can shoot typically just are a guaranteed positive. If they get Mecca back, or it depends on if they release him, maybe the Clippers will go get him, and that would be a huge signing for them because they really need a consistent backup big. But if he does play for Phoenix, like, that's exactly who they need on that back line to, like, make them a respectable defense.
It does seem it's bothersome that so many of these teams that were supposed to tank came out and and did well in the first. Like, it's only bothersome. Really, the whole thing that bothers me is Philadelphia, because I think you're familiar with my policy on preseason predictions that they're just entirely stupid and I don't like them. But we have to do them anyway, and we had to do, like, these record predictions. So I was like, I don't know, they look like they're going to suck. I'll put them at 9 wins. Like, they're going to tie the worst record. And then they win 3 in the first week, and people are like, you still sticking by that 9-win prediction? I'm like, I guess so. I don't know. I don't... Picking someone's record is really weird.
It is really tough, especially when, like, injuries and everything. It's a fun thing to do because, it's like, it's formalizing informal conversations everyone's having.
Right.
But, I would be happy if no one ever looked up my preseason.
The only time it worked out for me was the playoff predictions last year. I did really well.
Well, you must be so proud.
And that was a year after coming in second to last on the whole Deadspin thing for my preseason prediction. So it was a bounce back year for me.
Yeah, that's great. You're I think we're seeing that the sample size may be too small to judge you on one playoff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it also maybe is too small to judge me on one preseason prediction.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, you're basically not paying attention. You just do a random number generator and then write whatever shows up after.
Well, I will let you go. I know you've got plenty of Starbucks to sip and Puget Sound canoeing to do. But we can follow you at Beckley Mason. We can read your stuff at hoopspeak.com and New York Times. That's like an official publication.
Yeah, no, people have heard of it. I'm looking forward to you cresting 30,000 followers so you can take that monocle image off and I can follow you again. This is going to be a big day. You have to let me be the 30,000.
I will track it as closely as I can, and as soon as I get to 29,999, I'm going to call you and say, Beckley, you've got to follow me. You've got to be the 30,000th. I appreciate the time.
All right, thanks, man. Have a good one.
Thanks.